Today I'm going to be talking about biodemography of ectothermic vertebrates and what we can learn from studying, these very plastic types of mortality trajectories. And one of my co-authors is here, Dave Miller, is here in the audience from Penn State, and this is also with Fred Jansen at Iowa State, and Gary Fellers and Patrick Kleeman, who are with USGS in California. Okay, so I'm approaching this from a background of what we know from the rodent literature. And so, first of all, a couple generalities from the rodent literature. Sexes often differ in lifespan and aging rates. What do you have to point this at?
You have to point it back here.
Oh, okay, thanks. Thank you. Okay, aging interventions such as exercise and caloric restriction can have sex-specific and strain-specific effects, so there's variation there. Aging interventions have variable results depending on the age at the start of intervention. Okay, so one of these, lots of results suggesting that the age of onset of an intervention is important. And some general conclusions that aging rates are plastic and subject to sex by environment interactions. And so an example from my own work, when I was a postdoc, I worked with mice that had been selectively bred for voluntary wheel running exercise. And this is at generation 17. We housed them for the rest of their life with or without a running wheel after 17 generations of breeding. And we see that for females, the selected animals that had access to a wheel for their lifetime had lower mortality rates overall. And for males, what we saw was that control mice, in other words, non-selectively bred mice that had access to running wheels for their lifespan, had lower mortality rates overall. And so that's one example of a sex by intervention effect on mortality. If we look at a wild population of mammals, these are some data from a reintroduced red wolf population, Canis rufus, at the Alligator River Wildlife Center Refuge in North Carolina. We see what looks to be slightly lower mortality and lower aging rates in female red wolves than in male red wolves. But in fact, if we partition these data into whether they were captive-born or wild-born, we see that what appeared to be a pretty straightforward sex effect on aging, actually there's an interaction between early condition and gender. In terms of aging rates. So the female lines have now split apart, and what we see is the fastest aging rates in females that were captive born overall. So today what I want to do, and so that's sort of the framework and that's sort of the understanding that we're coming, that I'm coming to this talk with from mammalian studies. But today what I would like to do is understand the dynamics or communicate through the dynamics of mortality and reproduction in natural populations of ectothermic vertebrates. And look for effects of sex in early life, childhood. That's the only time I'll use the word childhood. Effects and effects of the environment. So why study ectotherms as a model for studying variation in senescence rates? For one, they have mostly indeterminate growth and indeterminate fecundity. So many ectotherms, amphibians and reptiles and fish, but I'll be talking today about amphibians and reptiles, continue growing over most of their lifespan. And many of them have increased reproductive output with increasing body size. So as they grow older, they're actually reproducing more. In the evolutionary theory of senescence, traits that increase any reproductive output of older individuals and populations are expected to change the dynamics of aging rates within natural populations. They don't have parental care, but so we expect social effects to be manifest through density and sex ratio in particular. And we may have ideas about solitary individuals, but there are pretty large basking aggregations as well as mating aggregations in natural populations of reptiles and amphibians. They have extreme metabolic plasticity, such as temperature-dependent metabolism, so very low metabolic rates at low temperatures, high metabolic rates at high temperatures, and everything in between. This has been suggested to buffer against the effects of early age stress. So if one can simply go to a cool place, for example, a cold place, one can sort of take a year off. And we've seen that in our snake populations that we work with, of individuals simply taking years off by staying in deep crevices in the ground. They have a number of physiologically plastic stress responses that have evolved, adaptations within the reptile lineage and some in the amphibian lineage, such as freeze tolerance, hypoxia resistance, retraction and regeneration of digestive tracts, of course the evolution of venom in snakes, and thermal stress resistance overall. And there are reports of negligible senescence in the literature for various species. So the other thing we wanted to work with were data from natural populations. They pose some challenges. For example, all animals are unknown age at the start of any study, and we rarely, if ever, find a carcass in our demographic work. We're also using marker capture data, so we don't take complete censuses. Most of the population remains hidden to us in any given year. So these are capture marker capture data. But we felt it was important to measure senescence in the presence of natural causes of death. And so here I have a couple of slides. In the snake populations that I've worked on, they have a lot of avian predators, such as eagles and osprey. And this is actually...
Sorry, your conference is ending now. Please hang up.
That's great. It's
next.
Okay. No worries. Okay, and then down here we have a part of a snake carcass, and right next to that was the footprint of a bobcat. And so we do a lot of surveys to understand what are the external sources of mortality. We also measure blood parasites. Fecal parasites, and things like trematode infection. In the turtle populations that I'll be talking about, one of the major causes of mortality are actually nest predators. So most eggs that are laid never hatch. Here's a snapshot of a motion camera taking a picture of a raccoon digging up a nest. There's also a lot of human-induced mortality in the turtle population that I'll be talking about. For years, we have measured physiological senescence. So an example would be in snakes, we see declining B-cell proliferative ability with advancing age and increasing bactericidal competence in plasma from snakes. And in turtles, over here are some data showing DNA repair rates based on UV damage or H2O2 hydrogen peroxide exposure is much better in hatchling turtles than in any other stage. And so we need age-specific vital rates to supply us with an ecological context for making meaningful evolutionary and ecological predictions for physiological senescence in ectotherms. So three species of data today. Species one is the Western terrestrial garter snake. These are populations that I worked on since the early 90s. The vicinity is Eagle Lake, California, in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. There are two types that live in this area. There are meadow populations and lakeshore populations. Lakeshore populations have fast growth, early maturation, so they mature at about two to three years of age. They reproduce annually and have larger litter sizes, and they have a short lifespan. Their median lifespan is 4 years, given that they survive to maturation. In contrast, our meadow populations have slow growth, delayed maturation, so maturing between 4 and 5 years of age. They take years off in terms of reproduction, have smaller litters, and they have a longer lifespan. So their median lifespan is 9 years, given, again, that they conditioned on living to maturation. And so I'll refer to these as long-lived and short-lived snakes for this talk. Here's reproduction data for our pregnant females, and the point here is simply to say we don't see any evidence of reproductive senescence in the snakes. Okay, the species number two, painted turtles, we have capture marker capture data from 1988 through 2013. These are nest layers. They lay eggs diurnally in June, and as I mentioned, nest predation is high. This is a population from an island along the Mississippi River in Illinois. It's a large population of turtles. Females mature between 6 and 7 years of age, and males mature younger, so between 3 and 5 years of age. We mark We measure marker capture. Everybody, we take a blood sample from every animal handled. We count and weigh all their eggs. And then we can come back in September and see who actually hatched. And so in that sense, we have complete sampling of their reproduction. In contrast to snakes, we do see reproductive senescence in the painted turtles. So this is relative fitness, which in this case is hatching success. And so hatching success versus reproductive age, we do see declining fitness in females from this population. Okay, and then finally, species number three is the Sierra yellow-legged frog. Here we have capture marker capture data from 2002 through 2013. They mature, both sexes mature at 5 years of age. And this is a population in Yosemite National Park at the Summit Meadow location in Yosemite. They are imperiled. They were once the most abundant vertebrate in Yosemite, but they evolved in fishless waters, and then fish were introduced, stocked for fishing purposes. And so that combined, predation by fish combined with chytrid fungus, which many of you probably have heard of in terms of declining amphibian populations, have really decimated these populations. Something about frog reproduction. They lay about 200 eggs per year, and they mature. Let's see, they spend about 2 years as tadpoles, so they have a long tadpole stage. They continue growing till they're about 8 years of age, and then they pretty much asymptote at about eight. So it's not complete indeterminate growth. Okay, so to work with marker capture data, we've been pretty limited in terms of how we can estimate age-specific mortality. But we did use a newer program, BASTA, implemented in R, which is out of the Max Planck Institute for Demographic Research in Rostock. This is the paper, Colchero et al., 2002. We fit Gombert's models with and without makeup terms. There are more options, but we didn't feel like our data, well, actually, it's not that we didn't feel, we tested other models, but Gombert's was always the one that our data could address. So BASTA estimates age-specific mortality using Bayesian methods for marker capture analysis, where true age is not known for all individuals. So this was the critical difference between natural populations that we were working with and some populations where many more animals are sampled. Over half of our animals that we sample are of unknown age, which had been a limitation in the past. And some assumptions are closed populations and no inter-individual variation in detectability and survival, so that's a potential limitation. Don't need to go over the conference model with this group. So here we have age-specific results, so age on the x-axis, the log of mortality on the y-axis, and we have, so starting with snakes, we do see here in for one population of long-lived snakes, there was a Macomb term was significant. For the other population, it was a straight conference model. Interestingly, for the short-lived snakes, we could not model age-specific mortality, perhaps because they're short-lived, perhaps because they have such high mortality rates. For frogs, we were able to compare and contrast males and females, and we saw no difference between male and female mortality for the yellow-legged frogs. And then interestingly here, the female turtles down here, our male data are still too sparse to work with. But for females, they age significantly slower than the other species that we were considering. But all three species show mortality senescence with advancing. Okay, some issues. We have a lot of known age animals that are unknown age in these models because they were not observed as neonates for snakes, primiparous females for turtles, or new adults for frogs. These are our three starting age categories for our models. We have trapping data for turtles and snakes, juveniles, males and females, for which we have independent age estimates. So for snakes, we count growth rings in bones, and for turtles, we count growth rings in scutes. On here, just not a major point to make with this, but these are the distribution of female reproductive ages across the two, the long-lived and the short-lived ecotypes of snakes. And so most of these data, for example, we couldn't use in our age mortality estimation in BASTA. And we all have time-varying covariates, such as body size and reproductive status that we'd like to include. So to model the effects of early life, effects on later life histories, we turn to Cormier-Jolly Seaver models implemented in Program MARC. For those of you who are used to working with marker capture data, Program MARC is sort of the state of the art. And this can utilize all known age animals. It can't utilize the unknown age animals. So this partitions capture marker capture data into recapture versus survival probabilities. And then we modeled survival as a function of age class, cohort quality, year quality, and all two-way interactions to try to get at this question of how do early life experiences affect late life demography. Okay, so first of all, age class. For yellow-legged frogs, we had to collapse our age classes because we were now dealing with only known aged animals. So for yellow-legged frogs, we had the first year of adulthood, age 6, and the rest of the adult stage, so 6 plus. For long-lived garter snakes, we had neonates, 1-year-olds, juveniles, 2 to 4-year-olds, and adults, so 4 plus. For short-lived garter snakes, we had neonates, juveniles, and adults, and the ages are different, but same 3 categories. And for panda turtles, we had young adults, middle-aged adults, and older adults for our analyses. There we go. For cohort quality, we decided to define cohort quality as good or poor, attempting to use independent data to assess whether or not a cohort was born in a good year or a bad year. For snakes, if annual precipitation is less than 500 millimeters, we define this as poor cohort. And we know this to be the case independently from looking at the relationship between precipitation and their prey availability. So these snakes are eating frogs. The frogs need standing water. If there's less than 500 millimeters of precipitation in a given year, there's no frog breeding. For frogs, if annual precipitation is less than the average for 2 years prior to maturation, these are poor cohort, and this is also based on food availability. For turtles, if the hatch success is less than 2/3 of intact eggs, we define this as a poor cohort, and hatch success, independent of predation, tends to be related to temperature during embryogenesis. Year quality was defined similarly good or poor, recapture years for snakes and frogs, again using our precipitation data. For turtles, we were unable to find any climate variable that indicated poor or good years for turtles, which is sort of interesting. We looked at an obvious variable, which would be flooding. We've looked at temperature, rainfall, et cetera, and we don't find any effects on life history overall to justify defining a poor versus good recapture year. I'm sorry, I'm seeming to be having very well. Okay, so frogs. The result for frogs was that if you're from a good cohort, your mortality decreases with advancing age. Poor cohorts, we see mortality increases in particularly in poor years. So over here is just a reminder of what the age-specific mortality looked like overall. And here's our Cormac-Jolly-Sieber models looking simply at survival or mortality in this case. And we see an interaction between cohort quality and recapture year quality. For long-lived snakes, basically the same result. We find that mortality decreases and stays low if you're from a good year cohort. For a poor year cohort, mortality increases in poor years, particularly in poor years. So again, an interaction between cohort quality and recapture year quality. And again, just a reminder that overall, they did have increasing mortality with advancing age. And then finally, for short-lived snakes, we found no effect of cohort or year. So the shape of the mortality looks the same, regardless of whether you're from a poor good cohort or poor good year. And likewise, and as a reminder, this is the category for which we were unable to model age-specific increases in mortality. And then finally, for turtles, we found no effect at all of cohort quality. And of course, we were unable to define a good or a bad year, a good or a bad environment year. So, some conclusions. Conclusions 1, age-specific mortality. All 3 species have measurable mortality senescence. These are based on 25 years, in some cases, of marker capture data analysis. Turtles increase mortality at a slower rate than the other 2 species. There are reports in the literature of negligible senescence in painted turtles. In fact, we don't find that to be true. We find that it is slower but it is certainly measurable, as well as I showed you earlier, reproductive senescence for the same animals. And then male and female frogs did not differ. So that's our one sort of sex-specific result. Conclusions two, early life in the environment. Frogs and long-lived snakes, there was effect of the cohort quality, recapture year quality, and effects of their interactions. This suggests that poor developmental conditions are associated with greater vulnerability later in life, as has been found in various mammal studies. For short-lived snakes, we found no effect of cohort quality or recapture year quality. And for painted turtles, there's no effect of cohort quality. And of course, we were unable to define a good versus poor recapture year. So, some closing thoughts then. Like mammals, many ectothermic vertebrates are sensitive to early developmental conditions, perhaps particularly so in low resource years. Other species, like turtles, that had a hazardous start to life, so I'll tell you my just so story about turtles. So they, if they hatch, the probability of making it from the nest to the water has an extremely high mortality probability associated with it. If they make it to the water, then they're usually pretty, you know, they're pretty safe from then on. But that's an extremely high mortality event. So other species like turtles may be buffered later in life once they survive the high early mortality stage. Okay, and so I think I have no 1 minute left, so I can just simply thank all of the high school and undergraduate researchers and graduate students and postdocs that have worked with us, the U.S. National Science Foundation, and Ecological Society for funding. Thank you.